Welcome to Alpha Trader. Aaron Task and Stephen Alpha are coming to you in the home stretch of the second quarter and the first half of 2021, which has been a volatile year. But as of the end of last week, the S&P 500 is in record territory after its best week since February. We're talking here midday Monday. The S&P last I checked was barely changed. The Dow was down a bit because of some weakness in Boeing. But overall, the bull trend seems to be intact. Let's find out from our guest today. Scott Redler is chief strategist of T3 Live and the T3 Trading Group. You can find him on Twitter at RedDogT3. Scott, welcome to Alpha Trader.
Thanks for having me. How's everybody doing today?
We are doing great. Thanks for joining us. In addition to what I mentioned, you also host a morning update called the 6:30 Club. And as of Monday morning, you mentioned you think we're going to see some digestion of the big move we saw last week. Before we go forward, let's take a quick step back. How significant to you was the move we saw last week in the S&P 500, the triple Qs, and other indices?
Depending on your time frame, it was more significant or not. Like for me, I'm a very active trader. I trade for a living. Most people that are in my community trade also real time, and they get paid monthly and quarterly. So last week's move was a big one. You know, about a week ago, we started right here, and we weren't sure what was going to happen, right? The Dow was in a little bit of a correction mode. We weren't sure if tech would get some flows. And all of a sudden, last Monday, had a big up day that basically brushed the bears back and said, hey, you guys have no power, which is what's been happening a lot since the pandemic lows. So it was very significant. That's when I put on a lot more risk. That's when tech proved that you could sit in things a little bit longer and also get rewarded for it and massage trades through pivots to make extra cash flow if you do use a tier system. And every single day, it felt like last week, the trade developed and they made it kind of easy to hold. You could have been in the growth names that put that low in May, a lot of Kathy Woods names. You could have been in a little bit of Netflix made a catch-up move. Bava made a catch-up move. Triple D was a great one. There was a lot to do last week. So coming in this week, like you said before, in the 6:30 Club, the 6:30 Club is a way for me to connect with anybody that really can't afford to be part of my premium service. Something I developed when the pandemic hit and no one knew what to do. They thought maybe this could be the financial crisis of 2007, 2008. I was getting hit up by guys in their 50s, 60s, 70s, people in their 20s, people from my next door neighbor. So I decided to do this little video in the morning saying, hey, my name is Scott Redler. I'm here to help. That started about a year and a half ago. And I called it the 6:30 Club. And I was doing it on Twitter. And I literally wound up having over 10,000 views a day after 3-4 months of it. And I just actually moved it to Instagram because I got kicked off Twitter. There are too many Scott Redler imposters out there. I don't know if you guys get those imposters. I got kicked off Twitter and I couldn't prove that I was who I was.
So that must be fun. That must be fun to be able to have to prove who you are.
And my mom called.
I've seen the show and I it's interesting. I'm not an active trader. So I just want to go back to that. You said you're an active trader. How would you distinguish that from a day trader, or do you consider yourself a day trader, or do you not make a distinction?
Well, most people do put on trades during the day. So everyone is really a day trader. And if they don't say they're a day trader, it's because maybe they have an ego or whatnot. And there are billion-dollar hedge funds that massage their positions every day. So they try and create alpha and cash flow. So, back in the day, maybe there was a little bit of, a little bit people would like poo-poo day traders or active traders, but everyone really would love to learn how to be one. And everyone loves to make money actively. That's why they go to casinos. But the way I do is I take out the casino from the actual trade. I try and get very strategic, very planned. I preach process and routine. I get up every day at 4:45. So if anyone says I gamble for a living, I'm like, you're out of your mind. Okay. Very, very calculated. And we do not gamble over here. Stocks do go down, which people say out there, oh, stocks don't go down. They do go down. You need to know how they feel and how to approach them. So I would say I am a day trader, but we've all evolved. I think the real day traders out there are the high frequency traders now, the algos that look for 3-4 cents. I don't think there's anyone in the business now that look for 3 or 4 cents to make a living. I think most proprietary traders that trade in my community have turned themselves into little portfolio managers, and they try and actively approach the market and use a process to have risk on when actively you're getting paid to do so, or have risk off when the market's not feeling well, when the S&P's below the 821 day, when things are making lower highs and lower lows. Then you just have less on and you maybe trade from a short position if you can handle it, or you pick and choose your spots and go about it that way. So I think most prop traders out there consider themselves little PMs. They use options. They use lots of different ways. No one's just really, really day-to-day trading unless you're, I think, a computer, because you can't be as fast as them.
Right. So you mentioned the S&P's 8 and 21 day moving averages. Your shorthand view is that if it's above that, it's risk on. Below that is when you get more defensive. Is that fair to say? And where do we sit right now vis-a-vis those numbers?
That's very fair to say, because a lot of people out there have been very hurt with opinions, whether it's the S&P, whether it's sectors, whether it's stocks. You know, somebody says, oh, you know, this is overvalued, I'm going to short it. And meanwhile, it's traveling above the 21 day, very strong with momentum. And they get very hurt short. Or someone loves things, like even like in February when, you know, Kathy's ARK reached its peak and some of the growth names went from like 90 to 20. A lot of them broke their 21 day at 70. You didn't have to pick a top. You just had to pick when the momentum left. And if you're a momentum active trader, you get out of the way. So I try and use the 21 day because that takes my opinion out of it. It tells me, especially if it's the S&P, that the market's strong. So right there, if the market's above the 21 day, I try and have positions on. Then I look for the best positions that are near their all-time highs, that have really nice chart patterns that I could be in some, and then they get in motion and you could add a tier and then sell some into strength and hold some and trail some. And usually that kind of stuff happens when the S&P is above the 21 day, when the Qs are above the 21 day, when the Russell is, because that's the kind of market I like. When tech and the Russell and are leading the way, I like to have a lot of risk on, and there are a lot of pockets during the course of a year when that happens. And that's when you have to really be focused, have risk on, make the money while it's there, and then figure out when it falters a little bit and then take it down. So this way you're not caught.
Now, here's what concerns me about the market right now. We had a bunch of record highs hit last week. Everything looks like clear sailing ahead. And I know you don't trade. I think I read somewhere you don't trade bonds very actively, but bond yields, long-term bond yields are going down. They're down another 5 basis points this morning. 10-year yields at 1.47%. Is that telling us something that we need to be concerned about? Maybe all the talk is inflation. All the talk is the Fed cutting back on their monthly purchases. You would think this would all be very, and the market's roaring ahead. The economy's roaring ahead. You'd think bond yields would be shooting higher, but they're going down. Is that a concern to you when you see that kind of divergence?
Can I ask you a question? Was it a concern to you when the 10-year was trading, what was it, at 1.15? What was that magic number that everybody was talking about? The 10-year, remember about a month ago or 2 months ago? Or maybe
150, I think, is
yeah, 1.75. I'm sorry, 1.75. I'm not, as you said, I'm not a bond guy, but I do remember in my head that, you know, 1.75 was like the number when all of a sudden the market wouldn't be able to handle it. Do you remember then?
Right. What I would say, the bond yields were rising for a very good reason, then, right? The economy was reopening. The economy is doing a lot better. So bond yields should be, you would think bond yields should be rising. Right now, we're seeing bond yields falling despite a booming economy, despite rising inflation, despite a more hawkish Fed. The bond market is not reacting as one might expect given the news flow. So I guess my question is, is that divergence at all concerning to you?
That kind of tells me I need to be a little bit more weighted in tech, especially if it's above the 21 day. Because again, when the market was getting too hot and they started to sell the good news, I always hate when the market sells the good news. I also kind of hate when the market buys the bad news. Mm-hmm. You know, I like when the market trades on the way it's supposed to trade, but that usually happens at extremes. So I don't think we're at an extreme yet where these lower yields are giving us an indication that all of a sudden we're going to be in this huge slowdown. But I think it's a little mechanical. And I look at it at extremes, and I think it's good to know, like you're saying, that it's starting to get a little bit extreme from where it was then to where it is now. But I don't foresee that as a problem. But again, my process is, you know what, I'll foresee that as a problem when the S&P breaks the 821 day and stays below, because that means momentum is leaving the market. And that means the market cares about it. So until the market cares about something, I really don't care about it. You know, I'll wait till the market cares and the market will show me signals that it does. I won't have, you know, both my eyes closed to it. I'll realize that it's there, you know, and that if all of a sudden that becomes the obsession on TV and with a lot of the macro guys, and then I'll see what the threshold is. Like, there's always a threshold. Then the market cares when it makes new thresholds. So at this point, it doesn't seem like the market's caring about lower yields. At some point, it might, and we might get like a, they might shake the tree, and then all of a sudden, you know, traders care about it. But until then, I'm not really quite worried about that.
And you mentioned that lower yields, obviously good for growth stocks, which have been performing well last several weeks. Last week, you said you saw some good setups in Alibaba, Netflix, among others. Mm-hmm. Your video this morning, you talked about Amazon, and you said you might see a quote-unquote buyable dip in Amazon. You're also long Apple, and I believe still long Alibaba. So I know you, you know, it's hard on a podcast to be a chart guy, but without having the charts in front of you, what are you looking for to say this is a good setup versus something I want to stay away from or short?
Well, one, I like to see a tight consolidation. I like to see a multi-month channel. Sometimes a trade is on buying versus very big support. Like Baba and Netflix were different trades than ones that I'm used to. I like momentum trades. Those were, you know, very blue chip names that have been these multi-month channels that were kind of against the bottom end of the channel. So I felt like I'll put on some options just in case it wakes up and goes, because at that point, a week before, Amazon went 300 points. Apple was looking good. Facebook was at an all-time high. Google was at an all-time high. So I'm like, hey, maybe that works. So I put some, you know, some risk on there. But typically, again, the best setup I like is a channel where it's in the top third of the channel because it's showing strength. It's above the moving averages. It's getting tight. And I could buy it through the all-time high and it could extend for multiple weeks and have a nice breakout. So as far as like just say, like this morning was a great trade. I don't know if you saw in the 6:30 Club also, I started talking about Tesla. You know, Tesla yep. is, to me, is fantastic. You know, when it's above the 821 day, it was my number one P&L stock last year when it was trending, when they got added to the S&P 500, when they split their stock. And this year, Tesla's gone through a major consolidation where it has to absorb all that supply. So with Tesla, you know, if everyone wants to imaginary, you know, punt, you know, you're listening to this, post up your chart or punch it up. I started getting back involved right around, you could say, June 21st, 22nd, because if you look at the chart, it's now back above the 21 day. You have a lower level base where if it gets above it, I was like, there's room probably to about 700. And then last week was it was a great trade. And then it came down on Friday because everybody was talking about the recall. And, you know, this is the moment of truth. Some analysts came out. Right. And all of a sudden, my guys on my Alpha team were like, you know what? It's just a software update. You don't have to, they're not recalling. You're not turning in 300,000 cars. So I was like, ooh, it's down a dollar or two. You know what? If it could stay above 667, I'll buy it because technically it's acting better. And, you know, I was buying it pre-market. I think I was on my morning call. I'm like, hey guys, watch me buy it. I was buying it down a dollar or two. And now here it is around 690. And now if it could hover here for a few more days, then I bet you could even add to it above 697.57, which is the high from last week. But I'd rather see it hang out here for a day or two, create a bull flag, which is a great continuation bullish pattern. And then the next level would be 724, where it could fill that gap. So again, I'm a technician, but I understand what the word is out there and what people are reacting to. And then I try and play the overreaction if, you know, too many people are off sides.
If there is one, right? Yes. Maybe that's what happens. That's what's happened in bonds. Just to go back to Stephen's question earlier, maybe that's what happens in bonds. A lot of people got caught off sides. Yeah, thinking bond yields were going to shoot up and they didn't. And so now they're covering.
Yeah, entirely possible. Yep.
Yeah.
Actually, so I do think that did happen. That happened right around the Fed time because everyone thought the Fed was so hawkish.
Right.
And meanwhile, they brought out the dovish playbook.
Right. And they, you know, again, we've talked a little about this a lot on this podcast, and I don't want to go down the Fed rabbit hole with you because it's not your focus. You know, they've talked a lot. They haven't done anything. Right. So, you know, the talk is cheap. Even
more
for the
talk
Fed,
is all you need sometimes.
So I think that's what I was going to say. Maybe for the Fed, talk is a lot, you know, so that they talk, the market reacts, and they don't have to do anything. They keep their powder dry. But so getting back to stocks and your focus. So we've talked about some, you know, mega cap techs, but you're also active in smaller mid cap names as well. Any particular names you're looking at right now as we're talking here Monday midday that you see good setups in?
Well, I wish we were talking last week at this time because there are so many of them. Right now, like think something that I'm in, if you punch the symbols are SKLZ. I don't want to pronounce a company wrong. Sometimes I pronounce a company as its own ticker. It's Skills, mm-hmm. Nice lower level yep. trade. Got back above the moving averages. I started buying it last week. It's having some continuation. I still think there's some room here up to 2488. CCIV was a decent one from last week. also that I started buying it in the 24s. I said, hey, there's some room to 2788 and then possibly more. So it kind of kissed 2788 today. You know, when it's kind of like, you know, when a sector is moving, when the dog starts barking, some tails can wag. And I call myself the red dog, not because of that. I can tell you that over drinks. But Tesla started acting better. So then all the EV names started acting better. So if Tesla's finally back in play, then NIO is acting a little bit better. I bought NIO today. CCIV is a little bit better. Then all of a sudden the battery plays start acting better. And then, you know, it's like a food chain. So anyway, I started looking at this when Tesla started waking up. And it's working out pretty well, but I massage it. It's a tiny bit extended. I think NIO is an interesting chart. NIO broke out today. I wasn't long it. Some guys on my Alpha team brought it up and said, hey, look at NIO. It's nice and tight, nice wedge formation. So I'm like, yeah, it does look pretty good. So I was buying it in the 46 area, and now it's above 48. So that's like kind of back in play. That also was a big mover last year that needed time to digest.
Right. And so, yeah, a couple of these names you've mentioned, NIO, as I'm looking here, it's up 8.5% today. Skills was up over 7% today. So again, you know, we in the media, and I'm certainly among them, look at the S&P and like, oh, it's a nothing day, but there's some serious moves happening on the surface here. And that's where you focus your time and energy.
I like to be in the moving business, not in the storing business. Usually you buy something that moves and all of a sudden it breaks the 8 and 20 one day and turns into an investment because you didn't sell it and use your sell rules. So there's definitely action in a lot of places if you're trained to look for it. Listen, a lot of guys on Twitter reach out to me like, well, Red Dog, you know, put up your account versus my S&P account over the last 20 years. And I bet you I'm doing better than you. I'm like, I'm just happy you're in the market for 20 years. That's great. If you're a long-term investor, you should be putting monthly flows in every single month into an S&P fund. Just do that. If you don't have the time to come up with a process or routine, if you don't want to do it to create cash flow, or there are a lot of people that aren't professional traders, but you know, on the side, they like to learn technical analysis, use charge patterns, find winners. So this way they can add a few stocks to their funds, you know, and then you have in the best of both worlds. So there are a lot of people that subscribe to me that also, you know, aren't necessarily a prop trader. You know, like a month ago, I had a root canal, and all of a sudden, four guys like, hey, I'm a dentist. You know, make sure you use the laughing gas. I was like, wait a second, you're a dentist? And he's like, yeah, I'm in between appointments right now. I wanted to see what you were trading.
That's the classic dentist trading. Yeah, at least they're still practicing dentistry. When they leave dentistry, then I think we're getting closer to a peak.
Well, I did that also because that was happening in December. You know, I was getting phone calls from a lot of people who made 5 times their average money last year because some momentum was there and things were moving. And all of a sudden, they're like, quit my job. And then I did a whole big video about Charlie the Carrot Chaser, you know, about how you don't want to be Charlie the Carrot Chaser, finding that, you know, the next best thing. Cause you know, there were 300 people in my group back in the year 2000 when I was trading, and they all left being a doctor or a lawyer or this or that. They were, you know, coming in cargo shorts and sandals, and they were making really good money. And then when it got hard and the NASDAQ bubble burst from 5,000, come 2001, we went from 350 people to 30.
Right.
But then the 30 right. people who trained themselves through technical analysis, took courses, treated it as a career, they've enjoyed a really nice bull run up until, you know, the financial crisis. But then those guys also had that best year during the financial crisis because they lived through the tech bubble bursting. So,
right.
You know, if you stayed the course in any career, you know, you probably could ride out the tough times and the great times and just, you know, be a little bit even keel.
Right. So I want to talk more in more detail about your process, which you've alluded to a couple of times before we take a quick break. But before we do that, there was one other name I wanted to ask you about. You tweeted about SunPower Corp, the symbol SPWR, this morning. The stock is up more than 8% as we're talking here, closing in on noon. You said, working from last week, I managed it. What does that mean, I managed it?
Oh, that's a great question. So I use a tier system, meaning that I like to buy things right before they're ready to go. And when they get in motion, I like to add to them. Because sometimes you don't feel comfortable holding a certain amount of shares unless it's in motion. Because if it's not in play, you know, your P&L swings around. So I bought SPWR right around June 23rd. If you looked at the chart there, it looked very tight. It started to get above the moving averages. TAN, which is the ETF for the solar sector, was in play. And usually historically over the summer, I'm not like a calendar guy, but typically, you know, solar, sun power, people just get in the mood to buy solar stocks.
So, and oil has jumped up a lot too. That's got to get people more interested in the solar names, right?
That's definitely a coincidental indicator, if that's the right word. So
I think so. We'll go with it.
So then today you could have been like, just say here, I'll give you a great example. So just say you bought 1,000 shares of SPWR on the 23rd, okay, and had a little bit of a move up on the 24th. So maybe you went from 1,000 shares to, you know, 700 shares, or from 2,000 shares to, you know, you want to book a little bit and manage it. But you're like, you know what? It's holding here above this 27 area. I think it's going to take out that high from a bunch of days ago, which was 28.77, to make a new high. So some people just say if they came in with 1,000 shares, it goes through the high from 2 days ago. You say, hey, I'm going to add 1,000 shares because now it's in motion on its way to what could be resistance of just say 35, because that's my target, because that's prior congestion. You add some through that prior high. It goes 2 or 3%. You're like, you know what? I want to book some money, you know, net it for the day, but continue to hold what I have from last week. So you're managing the trade because you're a little portfolio manager of your own account. And then you could still hold some, but then you also made some money along the way. So this way, you know, it's not all or none. I'm not an all or none guy. I believe in a tier system. You can cost average in and actually get much bigger when it's working, not working, and then cost average out. So this way, you know, you could hold on to something as you could sometimes make a bigger move to bigger targets.
That's a great place to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Alpha Trader.
Hey, welcome back to Alpha Trader. Aaron Taskin, Stephen Alpha here with Scott Redler. Scott, we're now moving to the obligatory crypto portion of the show. Obviously, Bitcoin fell from 65 and has mostly been in a range of roughly 32 to 38 for the past 6 weeks or so, plunged kind of below that last week. Was around 30,000 over the weekend and has had a sizable reversal up to about 35,000 this morning. Ethereum and a bunch of the other cryptos coming alongside for that. You called it a red dog reversal over the weekend. And can you describe what you're seeing there?
Have you guys ever heard of the red dog reversal?
I hadn't until this you morning. Said it. I also never heard of an angry lobster until you talked about it. And that's a whole
angry
other discussion.
Lobster. You go to Rooney's in Long Branch, you'll have the best meal of your life, the angry lobster. You can only have it once a year, though. Otherwise, your stomach will be in bad shape. But it's a very, very good meal.
Putting that in my notes.
Yeah. I'm putting that in my notes, too. That's maybe the most important takeaway from this podcast. No, I'm kidding.
And then you go for a run the next day. You put on a little Rocky. You feed your brain. You have a great weekend. A little bit of everything. That's what I try and tend to do. You know, being a creature from the 70s, we're born in the 70s. So let's talk crypto. Okay. Because crypto, you know, has been front and center. So, you know, I'm going to be 100% honest. I really never traded crypto when it was hot the first time into 2018, when it had its first move up to the 18,000 area or 19,000 area, when, you know, that was like the first move. I missed that. So as a technician, as a chief strategist, I have to get to know sectors that might be in play moving forward. So right around, just say December, I just want to take a quick little backtrack, a little memory lane. I talked my wife into letting me transfer over X amount of dollars to a Coinbase account because we don't trade crypto, you know, at T3 on our front ends. Some people trade Bitcoin futures or whatnot. So I just started my own little, you know, Bitcoin accounts because I like to be involved in things that I'm talking about. I don't like to just talk about them and not have the emotion and not have the real effect of what's happening. So I was able to, you know, put money in because I was staring at it back in December. And that's when I tweeted, you could go to any of the public Twitter accounts and this and that. I'm like, you know, I just started a Coinbase account because it looks like Bitcoin's going to have a huge break above 20,000. Okay. Because it was going sideways, whatever. So I don't want to take up too much time, but basically it was above. Remember that little rule I talked about, the 821 day? I like to be in something that's above the 821 day. Well, from 20,000 to about 41,000 and never even tested the 8 day. It was a pure move, a double from 20 to 41. Okay. Which happened basically on January 7th. So it didn't take that long. I actually was sitting on my couch with a friend of mine right around 20. We had like 2 bottles of red wine and he's never traded crypto. I'm like, just open this account. He transferred over 10 grand and he had such a great time over New Year's because he was hanging out with his little 20-year-old kids who were all in crypto and he felt pretty cool about himself. But anyway, that's a true story. So moving along. So all of a sudden from 41,000, it corrected. Okay. And then right around January, the end of January, it reclaimed the moving averages again. At that point, I went to a decent amount of cash because it was extended. I went back in to a higher percentage of crypto right around February 1st. And then let's just fast forward. We made a move all the way to 64,000. So it tripled from 20. I was in it in some capacity during the entire time. My account actually tripled from what I put in. So my wife was very happy with me.
Sure.
And then she got a new refrigerator. We're redoing the kitchen. I told her she can go higher end Wolf. But anyway, at this point, actually, no, that's the stove. The stove. She said
that's the
Wolf,
stove. Yeah.
The Wolf refrigerator, she said, it's not worth it. So I think she went with something with the Frigidaire. But anyway, so now go to the first chip in the armor, however you want to say it, was April 17th. The move broke the downtrend that was, the uptrend that was in place since the December breakout. It broke right around, 60,000 on that session and broke below the 21 day on April 17th. April 17th, I got down to probably 80% cash in my crypto account. Okay, then you had a bounce. So what happened here in technical analysis land, it started to build the right shoulder of a head and shoulders top pattern. So you have the left shoulder, which was the 61,000 peak. The head was a 64. So even if you missed selling on that day, which was April 17th, you had the lower high right shoulder building in early May. And I did tweet out, it's documented, timestamped, that right about 2 hours before Musk tweeted that he is no longer accepting Bitcoin. I said, I'm going to 100% cash in my crypto account. I don't like the lower high. I don't like the way the altcoins all went nuts. I don't like that coin just came public. I don't like that every 10 minutes on CNBC, there's a GBTC commercial. I'm like, it's not for me. So everyone's like, well, what about your investments here? I'm like, I'm changing my mind. I'm a trader. I'm a little fickle. So I got out on that day, May 11th. And if you look when it broke, when it broke the 821 day, it was around 52,000. If you would have used just my 821 day moving average rule, you could have got out. You could have been in all cash. And then boom, you had to move down to 30,000. So that created a point of reference. You had to write down. You had one bounce off of it. Then you had 31,000, which was the higher low on June 7th. And then you built this channel here. And then last week, right around this time, I think it was, or was it 1, 2, 3, 4?
It was on Tuesday.
It was when the whole world, everyone was like, technicians are talking about 30,000. I think I might've been that technician. I'm like, I sent out a tweet and I said, what's very important here is get below and stay below. Okay. Or get below and reclaim. Why? Because if everyone's looking at 30,000, 31,000 as holy cow, I need to get out of the way if that breaks, because when, Bitcoin broke the 50,000, it was an avalanche. All of a sudden it could have retested the 20,000 or the 24,600. Instead, what did it do on that day? It went below because everyone was selling it, all the loose hands, whoever might've been in too much pain, but what did it do? It didn't stay below. Okay. Then a lot of people probably got short Bitcoin saying, oh, it got below and maybe we're going back to 22. So it reclaimed that area. So as a technician, it's very important to know that area because that's where the rubber match spot is. So that's a spot between the bulls and the bears on what could be next. So on that day, it wound up reclaiming 30 and 31. So now anyone who sold it is like, oh my God, I'm such an idiot. I sold so late. I should have sold it when Red Dog said to sell it on the 821 break of May 11th. Or anyone who got short, all of a sudden they get trapped, and that's what creates a fast move. That's why that first move went from, 30,000 back to about 34,500. And then this weekend, it actually made a higher low, and now it's back at 35 at area. So to me, it was the action area. I had no idea what I was going to do. I just knew what to watch for. It was, if it gets below and stays below, maybe we'll have another washout trade. I had bids below it, 24,600 down to 20. It didn't happen. So when it reclaimed that area, I did rebuy some Ethereum in the 17s. And I did, rebuy some of the altcoins that I had, just to play some kind of bounce trade. At this point, no one could say whether or not that is going to be the low of the summer, but it does seem as if the bulls and the institutions might have took an active stand there. And now if it could hang here, the next level for Bitcoin is probably about 41,000 if it wants to get above this 35 area in the next few sessions.
So you just answered one of my two questions. I appreciate that detailed answer about where it's going. So my other question is, so what is your advice for the so-called hodlers here? The people who think of Bitcoin as some kind of either savior of everything or religion or a cult, however you want to call it. And I know obviously you're not that person.
No.
Do you have a thought for them that they might help them at some point?
Just, know your time frame, know what you can handle, and just know that trends change and your opinion is great. But if the market doesn't confirm it, it's only an opinion. There are some really smart people out there that I know that say, hey, Red Dog, you buy the S&P every single month in your long-term accounts every single month for the next 20 years, I'm buying Bitcoin. Okay. So if that's your plan, because you have a long-term thesis that Bitcoin's going to be what we use and nobody's going to use the US dollar or whatever it is, you know, that's your thesis. That's the way you're going to do it. Okay. But don't trade on margin and know what you can handle. Don't borrow someone's money to trade crypto or your parents' money or do whatever. Just
don't mortgage your house to trade.
Yeah. Don't mortgage your house. Yeah. Don't quit your job. Don't do all that. Just approach it responsibly. And how do you do that? Just with education. Listen to shows like yours that try and get people that know what they're talking about besides me to come on. So this way they can learn. So at this point to them, I would just say, again, there was a 2-year, what do they call it? They don't call it a bear market. They call it like the freeze below or something like that. So just know that at some points, you know, there are cycles. And you just had a boom bust cycle. There's a lot of people that got battered and bruised. And again, any asset class trades with techno. So at this point, someone's like, Red Dog, what percentage would you say that 28A is going to be the low of between now and Labor Day? I'm like, why does that matter? Like, just, we like that. We like calls. I'm like, I'd say that at this point, maybe there's a 70% chance that 28.8 is the low of the summer. Okay. Because I think enough people thought it was going to break below 30 and they got out and it was going to be done. So usually the markets like to make as many people, you know, wrong as possible.
Of course. Yeah. And to that point, I saw people seriously suggesting that if Bitcoin broke 30, the next support was at zero. I literally saw like technical analysts that I follow wrote that. So to your point, you know, again, the market does its best to frustrate the greatest number of people whenever possible. And certainly it did that with people looking at that 30,000 level on Bitcoin. So Scott, appreciate.
I'll say one more thing before we move on from that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just so you know, that same type of pattern works everywhere. You could Google Red Dog Reversal, the S&P. I've been on CNBC talking about it when it looked like the European Union was going to blow up back in 2012 and 13. And all of a sudden the S&P did like this huge reversal and then they never saw another correction from there. Or there's like so many ways to let the market tell you what's next, because usually at those major, major thresholds are where the opinions are the loudest, because, you know, you're at that pivot threshold area where someone's going to be very right or someone's going to be very wrong. So usually it creates a fast move, because usually a false move creates a fast move. And there's a lot. And then when there's a lot of, emotion around that, usually you see a bottom in the stock market when you turn on the TV and they have the octagon, when they need 8 experts on the TV to talk about what's happening and you see markets in turmoil, you're probably near a bottom.
Right. The market turmoil specials. That's when you know maybe things are getting towards the end of something, not the beginning.
Yes.
All right. So speaking of getting towards the end of something, and again, appreciate all your time here this morning. We've alluded to this and you've mentioned several things in the course of this podcast about your process. If you could, how could you or would you summarize what your process is? And we do like to have some, an educational aspect of this podcast. And one thing I will say is, there's no one way to skin the cat. Like, you have something that works for you and you follow it. Other people do it differently. But so if you could summarize, what's the Reader's Digest version of Scott Redler's process?
My routine and my preparation. I think, by getting up at 4:45 every day and having my process where I see what's happening around the world with the overseas markets, I kind of figure in my head where the futures are going to be. And then I know where certain stocks are at based on where the market is. You know, every day I come in and I actually have the luxury of having a service, because it makes me look at things 3 or 4 different ways, where at first I'm marking up 30 to 40 charts so I could visually see all the charts. Then I'm creating a note. So I'm writing down a lot of the things that I just wrote in the chart. So I'm like, I'm forced to look at them a few times because I forget things. and then I do a morning call video where I get to look at the charts and read my note to tell people about it. So it gives me 3 different ways to go over the things that I prepare for every morning. So then this way, when the market opens, I have the confidence to execute when things go in motion instead of second and third guessing it. And then I also have my own risk where if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Like, I hate the people on Twitter when they're wrong to get louder, because those are the people that put people in trouble. You know, you're wrong all the time. Same way Michael Jordan missed a gazillion foul shots, but he's had all the buzzer beater games, where Reggie Jackson struck out a lot of times, because he was preparing for his home runs. But I actually, you know, I don't like to compare that because I'm like a singles and doubles hitter. I don't try and hit a home run. It's not a get rich quick scheme. And I know that. So for me, it's like, you have to have a process and a routine because you have to, I love it because you have to do it every day. I come in the morning, I play music, I drink my iced coffee, I kid around with Red Pup and Instapup, my two young guys that are here to learn this summer. You know, we have fun. You know, and then on a Friday, we'll go out to lunch and we'll have a steak sandwich and an IPA and, you know, and just talk about the week and go over things. Like, you have to enjoy what you're doing. So this way you could do it for a long time and you could have passion about it. So do I miss things sometimes? Because I also work out at lunch. I like to, you know, 11:30, I know myself. You must know yourself. I know 11:30, I've been up since 4:45. I can't really think straight anymore. So I do a Peloton class at lunch, put my stops in so I can keep my positions when the trade changes, I get stopped out or I'm still in there. And sometimes I make the most money when I'm listening to Kendall Tool on my bike because I'm letting things go. You guys have a Peloton, Kendall Tool, Ali Love, Alex Susana. I'm touting them because I think it's a great thing. And stock was good at some point. But anyway, so I go at lunch and I refuel myself. So this way I can come back at 2 o'clock, trade the clothes, do my recap, post some charts, and then you know, be ready to spend family time. And then when I go home with the family time, people are like, Red Dog, why don't you trade futures? I'm like, why would I trade futures? I'm up at 4:45 in the morning. At some point I gotta play some basketball with my son and hang out and
Right.
And not be up all night trading futures.
So full disclosure, I don't have a Peloton bike. I want to get one. I am long the stock in a very small personal trading account I have. So I'm enjoying it in the last couple of weeks for sure.
Oh, you know, I have Peloton up right now. On June 22nd, as a technical analyst like I am, that would have been your day to buy it. That was a day that actually got back above the 21 day and was a great technical buy. And then it cleared 113. And today would be, if I said manage it, if you bought it, on June 23rd, today would be the day I'd say, hey, you just had a nice move from 110 to where it is. Trim some just in case it wants to come back and test the 8 day.
Thank you. I'll appreciate that advice. Thank you. We got to go now because I got to trade now. I'm just kidding. So seriously, before we wrap, I mentioned, you know, T3 Live and your Twitter handle, but where can people find you? And what's, you know, if someone wants to learn more about Scott Redler and your process, where should they go?
Well, T3 Live, you could go there and you can click on me. That's a great spot to go, t3live.com. We also have a lot of people that are kind of like me that have different styles. So there's kind of something for everyone. On Twitter, you said it, it's RedDogT3. And then the 630 Club, which if you really want to kind of get to know me a little bit, I would just go on Instagram and join the community on Instagram. And, you know, Monday through Thursday, I give my quick take in the market. What's happening, what the buzzwords are, depending on the narrative. Like today, you know, I knew everyone's talking about the Delta variant and maybe that would help the stay-at-home trade. And so I kind of know what everyone's kind of talking about. And then I try and figure out the market reaction. And then I go over some of the, you know, two or three really good names that I'm looking at for the day. So every time, you know, so every now and then I'll throw a fish in your boat, but then I'd rather really teach you guys how to fish. I do have an ebook. I have two ebooks. So if you want to learn about the 21 day, you could probably just Google Scott Redler Moving Averages ebook. And then I also have a tier system book. You could Google that, you know, Scott Redler tier system, risk management tier system. And I give out a lot of free content because I want people to learn. But if people want to really like be involved and hang out in my community, then they join the Alpha team, which is like 500, 600 traders talking about ideas, you know, hanging out, listening to music. You know, I do some happy hours, you know, or in my note, if they're, you know, if they can't do that all day and they just want the quick take, something that's real time as possible. I have the Redler report where literally I do it from 4:45. It goes out at 8:30. You know, a lot of people, a lot of services, they type it the night before and in the morning, everything just changed. So I get up as early as possible so I can take everything into consideration and give you guys the Cliff Note version. And then, you know, maybe you see one or two things on there that you like and you're in a different career and you create some cash flow from that.
All right. Well, thank you for joining our Alpha team. Here in Alpha Trader, our guest has been Scott Redler, Chief Strategist at T3 Live and T3 Trading Group. Scott, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Thank you, Scott.